Today on Enduring Word with David Guzik, pastor of Calvary Chapel, Santa Barbara.
Have you ever seen an amazing natural wonder? You know, I don't know, the Grand Canyon, Niagara Falls, you know, some amazing natural spectacle. You know, the Alps are like that. You see the mountains up there, the Matterhorn. It's so majestic. You just look at it. It just sort of takes your breath away. There's no more spirit left you. Well, I would say if you took all of that and multiplied it a couple times, that's what happened to the Queen of Sheba. She was absolutely blown away. She was overwhelmed by the wisdom of Solomon and the material splendor and glory of his kingdom.
With all of the information, historical accounts, and miracles in the Bible, it can be overwhelming to try and process it all. One of the very common things we face as steady readers of Scripture is the inevitable apathy towards certain things. One of many examples is the wealth and wisdom of Solomon. In today's message, Pastor David helps us to better understand the splendor of King Solomon. In our study, we gain a better picture of the man who was revered by several of the world's greatest leaders. Now, here's Pastor David with today's edition of Enduring Word.
Now, it happened at the end of 20 years when Solomon had built the two houses, the house of the Lord and the king's house. Hiram, the king of Tyre, had supplied Solomon with cedar and cypress and gold, as much as he desired, that King Solomon then gave Hiram 20 cities in the land of Galilee. So do you get the feel here? In exchange for all this gold from King Hiram of Lebanon, Solomon gave him some cities. Then Hiram went from Tyre to see the cities which Solomon had given him, but they did not please him. So he said, "What kind of cities are these which you've given me, my brother?" And he called them the land of Kabul, as they are to this day. Then Hiram sent the king 120 talents of gold, and the implication is as he had previously promised. Now, again, he sent him the wood, he sent him the gold, he sent him the things that he asked for, and what did Solomon give to, in exchange for him? And it's interesting. This is an interesting point, how you interpret this. It could be putting this here because it wants you to think that Solomon did a bad thing in giving away some of the land of Israel, which was God's land, right? This was the land by inheritance to the people of Israel. So maybe we're supposed to read this and say, "My heavens, Solomon, you fool, you gave away this land. Why did you ever do that?" Or it may have another idea. It may have the idea of, "Oh, Solomon, you're so smart, you tricked Hiram of Tyre. You went into a negotiation with, you say, I'll give you these 20, you know, towns in the Galilee area in exchange for all this gold." And when Hiram went and saw the towns, he said, "These are the lousiest little villages I've ever seen in my life. Who wants these?" That seems to be the attitude that you get from Hiram in this. The idea may be that Solomon was such a shrewd businessman that he got the better of Hiram in these arrangements. And so if you want an example to see that Hiram thought this was a bad deal, he named the place Kabul. Do you know what that means? Literally in the Hebrew, good for nothing. He looked at it because these are good for nothing. So I have to be honest with you. I don't know exactly how to take this passage. I don't know if you're supposed to think, "Oh, Solomon, you're bad for giving away the land of Israel," or, "Solomon, you're so smart." But smart, but might I say sneaky smart, you know, deceptively smart, not necessarily the kind of smart that the people of God should be. Verse 15, "And this is the reason for the labor force which King Solomon raised to build the house of the Lord for his own house, the Millo, the wall of Jerusalem, Hazor, Megiddo, and Gezer. Pharaoh, king of Egypt, had gone up and taken Gezer and burned it with fire and had killed the Canaanites who dwelt in the city and had given it as a dowry to his daughter, Solomon's wife. And Solomon built Gezer, lower Beth Horon, Baalath, and Taldmor in the wilderness in the land of Judah, all the storage cities that Solomon had, cities for his chariots and cities for his cavalry, and whatever Solomon desired to build in Jerusalem, in Lebanon, and in all the land of his dominion. All the people who were left of the Amorites, Hittites, Perizzites, Hivites, and Jebusites, who were not of the children of Israel, that is, their descendants who were left in the land after them, whom the people of Israel had not been able to destroy completely, from these Solomon raised forced labor as it is to this day. But of the children of Israel, Solomon made no forced laborers, because they were men of war and his servants, his officers, his captains, commanders of his chariots, and his cavalry. Others were chiefs of the officials who were over Solomon's work, 550 who ruled over the people who did the work. But Pharaoh's daughter came up from the city of David to her house, which Solomon had built for her. Then he built the Millo. Now, here it tells you why Solomon needed this labor force. He had so many massive building projects that he needed this labor group to help him in the job. And so it describes all these different places that he built. But probably more interesting to us was the slave labor that he raised in order to do this. Apparently, this was another compromise on the part of Solomon. God strictly commanded that those who were left from these tribes be driven out of the land, not that they be used as slave laborers in Israel. Solomon didn't make the Israelites slave laborers, and that's good. But what he did is he used them to oversee the Canaanite laborers, the slave laborers, which God never said make the Canaanite slave laborers. He said drive them out of the land. So this is another example. We look at this in Solomon and go, not so good. So do you see the progression we have here? Solomon builds the temple. It's all great. It's all glorious. God makes him this promise with a great warning. And then we have the story about Solomon and Hiram. Not so good. Now Solomon, the Canaanite slave laborers, not so good. Well, let's take a look here, verse 25. Now, three times a year, Solomon offered burnt offerings and peace offerings on the altar which he had built for the Lord, and burned incense with them on the altar that was before the Lord. So he finished the temple. King Solomon also built a fleet of ships at Ezion-Geber, which is near Eloth on the shores of the Red Sea in the land of Edom. Then Hiram sent his servants with the fleet, seamen who knew the sea, to work with the servants of Solomon. And they went to Ophir and acquired 420 talents of gold from there and brought it to King Solomon. Now, it says that three times a year, Solomon offered burnt offerings and peace offerings on the altar which he had built for the Lord. It's possible that this is another negative comment about Solomon, because it's possible that it means that Solomon himself personally did this, and that would be a violation because kings were not supposed to offer sacrifice, only priests. However, I should say that it is also entirely possible that Solomon simply did this through a priest. Many times in the Old Testament, when it says that a king offered such and such sacrifice, it really means that he did it through an appropriate priest. So we can't say for certain if this is a negative comment about Solomon or not. But he did show great enterprise, great industriousness. The idea is that he went to Ophir and got gold from there. You know, we don't know exactly where the land of Ophir is. There are several different suggestions, but nobody knows exactly. The idea from this is to give you the impression that Solomon is a smart, enterprising businessman. Yeah, if you think about Solomon, he would be the man on the cover of one of these business magazines. You know, he's smart. Now, David would have never made the cover of a business magazine. You know, I don't know what magazine David would have been on the cover of, but he wouldn't have made the cover of a business magazine. But people look at, you know, Solomon would be the guy writing the book on how to be successful in management. And everybody would want to know that from Solomon. David would be writing worship songs of love to the Lord. Do you see the contrast here? We kind of see it again and again. Sharp, shrewd businessman, but not much of a heart for the Lord. Now, chapter 10, verse 1. Now, when the queen of Sheba heard of the fame of Solomon concerning the name of the Lord, she came to test him with hard questions. Now, this queen was from the land of Sheba. It's also known as Sabaea. It's where modern-day Yemen is today, southern Arabia. We know from geography that this was a wealthy kingdom. It had gold, it had spices, it had precious woods. History also tells us that in this region, the land was ruled by not only kings, but also by queens. Now, this was a long trip for the Queen of Sheba to come to Jerusalem. It was something like 1,500 miles or 2,400 kilometers. And she probably came there as part of a trade delegation. You know, let's go and see if we can do business with this man Solomon and his kingdom. But there's no doubt that she was very highly motivated to see Solomon and his kingdom because she came from such a great distance. And so when she came, having heard of the fame of Solomon concerning the name of the Lord, it says that she came to test him. Now, this is an important visit. The Queen of Sheba comes to Solomon when he's at his peak. Everything is at the top here in chapter 10. The great prosperity and splendor and wisdom of Solomon's kingdom were internationally famous. This is sort of a fulfillment of what God intended all along, that the nations would be drawn to a blessed Israel. But I need to, sort of push the mental pause button right here. Let's think about this. Yes, Israel was blessed. But I need to ask you a question. Were they more blessed for Solomon's sake or for David's sake? I suggest to you that Israel was more blessed for David's sake than they were for Solomon's sake. Anyway, it's an interesting thought. You can take it or leave it as you will, but let's continue on here. Verse 2. She came to Jerusalem with a very great retinue, with camels that bore spices, very much gold and precious stones. And when she came to Solomon, she spoke with him about all that was in her heart. So Solomon answered all her questions. There was nothing so difficult for the king that he could not explain it to her. And when the queen of Sheba had seen all the wisdom of Solomon, the house that he had built, the food on his table, the seating of his servants, the service of his waiters and their apparel, his cupbearers and his entryway by which he went up to the house of the Lord, there was no more spirit in her. So she came with a large group. You can just see all the people, the businessmen, all the government officials, all the people dressed up nice. It's an official delegation from the kingdom of Sheba coming to Jerusalem. And when she came, she wanted to talk with Solomon. You see, Solomon's kingdom was not only famous for its material prosperity, but also for his great wisdom. And so the Queen of Sheba asked hard questions, difficult questions of Solomon. It doesn't seem like they were just like riddles or, trivia questions. You get the idea almost that this is like a game show on television, Solomon, can you answer this question? But no, they were probably like diplomatic and ethical questions. It wasn't just an academic or mental exercise, but she wanted to get a sense of his wisdom and perhaps his integrity. She's testing, are you a good business partner for us in the future? And so when she had seen everything and asked all her questions and inspected all the work that Solomon had done, you see the conclusion of it there at the end of verse 5. It says there was no more spirit in her. Have you ever seen an amazing natural wonder? The Grand Canyon, Niagara Falls, some amazing natural spectacle. The Alps are like that. You see the mountains up there, the Matterhorn. It's so majestic. You just look at it. It just sort of takes your breath away. There's no more spirit left in you. Well, I would say if you took all of that and multiplied it a couple times, that's what happened to the Queen of Sheba. She was absolutely blown away. She was overwhelmed by the wisdom of Solomon and the material splendor and glory of his kingdom. And so look at her reaction here, beginning at verse 6. Then she said to the king, "It was a true report which I heard in my own land about your words and your wisdom. However, I did not believe the words until I came and saw with my own eyes. And indeed, the half was not told me. Your wisdom and prosperity exceed the fame of which I heard. Happy are your men, and happy are these your servants who stand continually before you and hear your wisdom. Blessed be the Lord your God, who delighted in you, setting you on the throne of Israel. Because the Lord has loved Israel forever, therefore he made you king to do justice and righteousness." You see, the Queen of Sheba heard these wonderful things about Solomon and his kingdom, but upon seeing it with her own eyes, she realized that it was greater than she had ever heard. It's rare for that to happen today. We live in a day today when things are exaggerated and hyped and made to seem so great when they're, well, it's okay. It's very rare when we come to something and say, I heard this was good, but when I'm here, I see that it's far greater than I had ever heard. And so she says, listen, happy are your men and happy are these your servants. It was a joyful thing for them to serve a great and wise and rich king. It was a happy thing to serve Solomon. By the way, shouldn't we drop what you could make a good sermon out of this right here. If it was a happy thing to serve Solomon, how much of a happier thing should it be to serve Jesus Christ? I mean, isn't that just the truth? It should be a much, much happier thing to serve Jesus Christ than it ever was to serve Solomon. And then she says, blessed be the Lord your God who has delighted in you. And this is an example of what God wanted to do for Israel under the promises of the old covenant. She goes away saying, blessed be the Lord. God promised Israel that if they obeyed under the old covenant, He would bless them so tremendously that the world would take notice and that they would give glory to the God of Israel. And that's exactly what the Queen of Sheba is doing. Let me read you from Deuteronomy chapter 28, verses 1 and 10. It says, now it shall come to pass, if you diligently obey the voice of the Lord your God, to observe carefully all His commandments, which I command you today, that the Lord your God will set you high above all nations of the earth. Then all peoples of the earth shall see that you are called by the name of the Lord, and they shall be afraid of you. You see, God said, I want to bless you so much because of your obedience that the nations of the earth would take notice. This reminds us that though God chose Israel, He chose them to be a way that He reached the nations. He wanted to reach the nations through Israel. He didn't want the choosing and the blessing to stop with Israel. And so she says, blessed be the Lord your God. Now, you want to get into a pretty good Bible debate? Here's a Bible debate. Was the Queen of Sheba saved? When she says, blessed be the Lord your God, is that a confession of faith unto salvation? It's a fair question. Taken in the context, I don't think you can say that these words prove that she was converted. Taken in context, I don't think you can say that this says, I forsake the gods that I knew about in Sheba, and now I will serve the Lord and Him alone. I don't think you can say that. No, this may be nothing more than the queen's response to the amazing blessing that was very evident in Solomon's Jerusalem. I want you to think about the Queen of Sheba and her response here for a minute, because I think that she is a great illustration of something facing Christians and the church right now today. And that's the whole business of tailoring what we do as a church, you know, making, fashioning, modeling what we do for the seeker. Don't you think the Queen of Sheba is a great example of a seeker? I mean, she really is. Matter of fact, we can admire the way that she sought. She came from a very great distance. She came with gifts to bring. Isn't that great? Wouldn't you love it if people who came and saw that they came with gifts? She came with questions, and she came to learn. She came and she saw the riches of the king. She came and she stayed for an extended period. She came telling everything that was on her heart, and she came and brought a bunch of people with her. And I tell you, that is like the ideal seeker. You couldn't want a better seeker than the Queen of Sheba. And as a matter of fact, Jesus used the Queen of Sheba as an example of a seeker. Let me read to you from Matthew chapter 12, verse 42. The Queen of the South, that means the Queen of Sheba, the Queen of the South will rise up in the judgment with this generation and condemn it. For she came from the ends of the earth to hear the wisdom of Solomon, and indeed, a greater than Solomon is here. Jesus' whole point was that if the Queen of Sheba sought Solomon and the splendor of his kingdom so diligently, how much more should people seek Jesus today and the glory of his kingdom? And believe me, she will rise up in judgment of this generation. But if we take the Queen of Sheba as an example of a seeker, we see that Solomon impressed her with his wealth and his splendor. And he also impressed her spiritually. The whole thing of the Queen of Sheba was like, wow, this is amazing. I never saw buildings like this. I never saw people like this. I never saw glory like this. It's all wonderful. She was very impressed. She was very touched personally, but she went home apparently unsaved. Now, doesn't that have something to teach us about the seeker-sensitive movement here? I mean, really. Now, it's wonderful that she was impressed. We don't think it's a bad thing that she was impressed by the material glory and the personality of Solomon. But at the end of the day, it seems that there was something missing spiritually in Solomon to come and connect with the Queen of Sheba. Again, I'm just guessing here, all right? I'm just guessing that if the Queen of Sheba had visited David, David would have done something different with her. David would have connected with her in a way that Solomon did not. This shows that impressing seekers with facilities and programs and organization and professionalism, it might be good, but it's not enough. You have to touch them with the Spirit of God. They need something from heaven. It's great if you impress seekers with all the other things. But listen, they need something from heaven to touch them. And it seems that this is what Solomon lacked. Well, he didn't come out the loser for it, though. Take a look here, verse 10. Then she gave the king 120 talents of gold, spices in great quantity, and precious stones. There never came again such abundance of spices as the Queen of Sheba gave to King Solomon. Also, the ships of Hiram, which brought gold from Ophir, brought great quantities of almug wood and precious stone from Ophir. And the king made steps of the almug wood for the house of the Lord and for the king's house, also harps and stringed instruments for singers. There never again came such almug wood, nor has the like been seen to this day. Now King Solomon also gave the Queen of Sheba all she desired, whatever she asked, besides what Solomon had given her according to the royal generosity. So she turned and went to her own country, she and her servants. Now, the Queen of Sheba came from a region that was rich in spices and in fine woods. So it made sense that these were the gifts that she brought to King Solomon. You got to love the phrase that it uses here. Solomon had given her according to the royal generosity. Now, if you're giving according to the royal generosity of Solomon, you're giving a lot, aren't you? It's like saying, I'm giving you according to the generosity of, you know, Bill Gates or of the guy who owns IKEA or whatever. You know, thinking, wow, that's a lot of money. It also shows the generosity of God towards us, doesn't it? And when God gives to us, doesn't he give to us out of his royal generosity? It's a great measure that God gives towards us. Now, I don't want to leave the Queen of Sheba without making one more just little side point here. There's a tradition. It's just a legend. Don't believe it. Don't believe what I'm about to tell you. They're really just fanciful stories. That the Queen of Sheba, when she visited, she wanted a son by Solomon. And so Solomon obliged her and gave her a son. Her child was named Menelech, and he became the ancestor of all subsequent Ethiopian monarchs. And, of course, the ancestor of a certain Ethiopian eunuch who was saved in the book of Acts. All right, you didn't believe that, did you? It's just a legend. So let's get back to the Bible instead of just legends. Verse 14. Let me just recap here. We are left again with another story that impresses us about Solomon, but yet there's something missing. There's something not there. Now look at verse 14. The weight of gold that came to Solomon yearly was 666 talents of gold.
As we are making our way through the books of 1st and 2nd Kings, King Solomon is certainly taking center stage. And his crowning achievement was the building of God's holy temple. This magnificent structure is like nothing that has ever been built on the face of the earth. And while Solomon is the most prominent of the kings in the books of 1st and 2nd Kings, there are many others highlighted in these books. Some of these kings followed after God, while others led the people into some of the most depraved and wicked times the nation of Israel has ever seen. God used Elijah and Elisha to attempt to call the people back to himself. Each day, Pastor David will share insights from these books that will bring clarity to our own walk with Jesus. We hope you'll join us again here on Enduring Word with Pastor David Guzik. You can add today's message to your study library by simply giving us a call at 805-730-1400. Keep in mind, we need today's date to ensure you get the right teaching. Or send us an email. Our email address is radio@enduringword.com. That's radio@enduringword.com. And when you call or email to place an order, please let us know how God is using Enduring Word. It's always a great blessing to hear testimonies of God's work. Use the contact option at enduringword.com. At the website, you'll also find a number of Pastor David's messages for you to download for further study. Enduring Word is the radio ministry of Calvary Chapel, Santa Barbara, in Santa Barbara, California. Join us next time, same place, for another edition of Enduring Word.